live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have a packed program, commentaries. This is a day where I've written my own commentaries, plus I'm going to be sharing commentaries from many different individuals, from Chris Hedges, Glenn Ford, and Professor Paul Craig Roberts, on the topics that I believe are important for us to focus some attention on. Now, I'm not in a location where I can do my normal broadcast, even with my Comrex unit, my portable Comrex unit, though my engineers are trying to do some of their magic, and maybe later on in the program we will get some of that compatibility, in which case I'll switch over from a telephone to our studio mic. Today we're going to begin with the latest on health and healing, and from there I'm going to do some environmental discussions, some public health issues, and then talk about what I believe is a very important time. You know, we focus almost exclusively in the mainstream and alternative media about the 63 to 65 million people who voted Democrat, or about the same number who voted Republican. What we never talk about is the 1 million people who are on the right side of history and the right side of every important solution that we needed, who voted Green, and the 100 million people who decided not to vote. Now, a lot of those people who decided not to vote simply didn't want the lesser of two evils. And that's exactly what we would have gotten had Clinton been in office and what we got with Trump. Why can't we have a third-party discussion in our society where we discuss what were those issues that the American electorate chose not to support, such as single-payer health insurance, closing down military bases around the world, doing something to de-ghettoize America, to recreate sustainable farming and sustainable manufacturing jobs or other jobs that can employ local people at a living wage? Why were these anathema to them? So we're not even willing to have that debate, so I'm going to have it and let the individuals in this audience see if they can resonate with some of this, because I believe that the Democrats, and including the best of intentioned ones, who maybe do not have the full background understanding of Hillary Clinton, nor how she and her colleagues and associates at the Democratic and National Committee immorally and unethically and illegally fixed the election for her nomination instead of Bernie Sanders. In fact, it was interesting. On my website yesterday, I posted a photograph of some people, I'm going to say maybe 50 people, cheering Hillary Clinton. But then a second picture taken at the same event shows you that there were only about 50 to 100 people there. Now, at the same time, on the same weekend, Bernie Sanders had an entire football field, a whole Coliseum full. And yet the media covered her event and not his, as if she was the one drawing the crowds, and she never once drew a crowd that was even one-tenth the size of Bernie Sanders. So clearly Bernie Sanders would have won, clearly he was more qualified, and clearly he would have come down at least on 13 issues on the side of right. 12 issues, no, but 12 is, I'd rather deal with those other 12 issues that he was not progressive on, knowing that he was progressive on some. So why can't we go back and look at this honestly? I believe that the Democrats and the liberals within the Democratic establishment are making a huge mistake by putting this enormous amount of time on Trump, because you're about to be embarrassed for several reasons, not the least of which is people don't want to hear you constantly complaining and crying that you had the election stolen. You didn't. Nobody that I know of, no progressive, would have voted for Hillary Clinton. They voted for Jill Stein. And second to Jill, they would have voted for Bernie Sanders. But more importantly, some brand new information has just come out. It's just been released over the weekend from WikiLeaks, showing that a new book showed that within hours of losing the Democratic presidential campaign, Hillary Clinton and her minions decided to do this whole campaign that you're now seeing about blame it on Russia, when they knew it had nothing to do, her loss had nothing to do with Russia. So this was a campaign. Now this is all being exposed by a reporter from Bloomberg who has a good reputation. And so this is going to be starting today. You're going to start seeing this. And this will only increase. So you don't have to do a thing against Donald Trump. In fact, Donald Trump is more than capable of destroying his own presidency and will. Why not focus upon what a new mindset in a new direction would do if you really went populist instead of corporate? Because everything about Obama was corporate. Everything about Clinton, Bill, and then Hillary is corporate. People are sick of this. They're sick of being lied to by everyone. And so think about that, because I'm going to share some ideas that you ought to think about getting behind and supporting at the local level until these become national issues. Let's begin talking about some of the latest things. According to this health crisis we're looking at, the ripple effect from the environment is playing havoc in our bodies. Now, I read an article in the Natural Blaze, a good publication, a reliable publication, an article by Eldon Dahl, D-A-H-L. And Eldon talked about neurotransmitters. Now, we know that neurotransmitters are chemicals in the brain that act as messengers between neurons or the cells in your brain. The effects of neurotransmitters are far-reaching, and they encompass most of our body processes, including all of our physical and cognitive performance, our weight, the perception and response to pain, sleep patterns, and our emotional and mental state of being. If neurotransmitting chemicals are imbalanced, the entire body is thrown off kilter, and it's estimated that 80% of people have some form of neurotransmitter imbalance. Now, a study found that toxic exposure can affect your neurotransmitters, even halt their activity. So, how are we affected? Well, there's no doubt that virtually everyone that I know of in the United States is affected. But it goes beyond that. According to the World Health Organization, quote, unintentional poisonings kill an estimated 355,000 people globally each year. In developing countries, where two-thirds of these deaths occur. By the way, that does not include 1 million in China alone. And such poisonings are associated strongly with excessive exposure to an inappropriate use of toxic chemicals. In such settings, toxic chemicals may be emitted directly into the soil, air, and water from industrial processes, pulp and paper plants, tanning operations, mining, unsustainable forms of agriculture, at levels or rates well in excess of those tolerable to human health, end quote. I'm pretty sure all of you, if you've listened to this program, if you saw the film Seeds of Death, then you know that the research that is in on glyphosate, Monsanto's Roundup weed killer, shows it's an environmental toxin. Just last year, the World Health Organization declared Monsanto's signature product Roundup, or glyphosate, a carcinogenic. However, the table seemed to turn this year as Roundup glyphosate was given a clean bill of health by the UN's joint meeting on pesticides residues just 2 days before a crunch European Union vote on whether to relicense it. Interestingly, later in the year, it was announced that pharma giant Bayer would be purchasing Monsanto, and Bayer CEO Werner Baumann said, quote, this step is entirely logical. The two companies are a perfect fit and complement each other ideally. You think? Well, I wrote my first book on the environment for the very first Earth Day. It was called Clear, Cleaner, Safer, Greener, Blueprint for New Environment. I'd spent 3 years researching it, traveling the United States, because we didn't have the internet. We didn't have the ability to do all this research at a distance from our home. You had to go out and do it. And I saw at that time, in interviewing farmers in Indiana and Illinois, Kansas, our breadbasket, that you could have a higher incidence of death in cattle, horses, sheep, where they were spraying lots of pesticides. You also saw bee colony decline even then where there was heavy spraying. You also found that where there was lots of spraying, there was contamination of the well water. In fact, one report, and I remember broadcasting about it at the time, showed that 69 million Americans, mainly living in rural America, did not have safe drinking water because the chemicals they were using on their land while farming was leaching into the sub-aquifers and contaminating an aquifer. Now, understand, when you contaminate an aquifer, it's contaminated forever. There's no way to get the pollution out. Keep that in mind when you realize that under Fukushima, directly under Fukushima, is one of the largest aquifers in Japan. So that means that radiation has been going in that water nonstop. That means the guy goes the way up into the rice-growing areas, and that means that water's being used to irrigate rice fields. You'd never know that looking at the American USDA and not having any problem with importing anything from Japan or even the Japanese government, because where they're going to get the water to irrigate if their aquifers are polluted, especially around a city like Tokyo, the largest populated city in the world, 40 million people. But here we have to look at things we use every day. So I'm looking at things right now, coming into summer. You're seeing people who are out there spraying their lawns. They want to get rid of dandelion greens. Hello, dandelion greens are one of the most nutritious bitters that you can get. They have multiple medicinal. They're good for parasites. They're good for viruses and bacteria, for blood purification for your liver. So don't kill them. Pick them and wash them and eat them. Separately, go into the average person's garage or look under their sink in their kitchen or look in their medicine cabinet. Loaded with chemicals. The microwave. Look at the aluminum foil. Anytime you have any heated product that you put in aluminum foil, the aluminum can be destabilizing, especially if there's any form of acid in the food. And then that leaches into the food. And then think of every time someone puts a plastic container into a microwave, the polymers, the actual chemical structure of the plastic, leaches into the food. So heating anything and putting it into a plastic container is dangerous. You also look at all the pipes that we use that bring our water into a house. And these are frequently made from a form of rubberized plastic that leaches and with incredible amount of these toxins going into our environment. Then you look at the pollutants in the air. Now, you don't have to be able to see them for them to be there. And those are being inhaled. The trouble is there's no process in the body that can actually take those, break them down, and use them safely. Look at the mercury in our dental fillings. 52% of the silver filling is actually mercury. Look at the mercury in the fish that people are eating. Look at the canned fish, where the way that they seal a can is with a lead solder. Now that lead solder leaches out into the fish. Look at the mercury in the fish. So everywhere we're looking, we're bringing a toxin from the environment in. Look at those air fresheners. Those air fresheners, if it was a matter of spraying, let's say, lemon juice or orange juice or lime juice into the air, and there are some products like that, that's fine. That will kill bacteria, fungi, and mold. It's good. School teachers, if they spray the kids' desks with that little rubbing alcohol or hydrogen peroxide and wipe down the desk after each class with a paper towel, you would stop an awful lot of hand-to-desk infection. But we don't use those. We don't use those in our air conditioner. What do you think is going on overnight in your car in the hot weather? The heat builds up. With heat comes humidity. With humidity comes mold and spores. You turn on your air conditioner to cool down your car, and thousands of those spores are suddenly blown out into the air, and you're breathing them in. Now, if you want to kill them, you simply take an air therapy made out of natural citrus, and if you want, you can put some alcohol in there and spray it in the vents. You spray it in, it kills the spores, and therefore you don't get the whole car filled with that. If you had that in your house and you just walked around once a day and just sprayed over your head, just hold your arm straight up in the air and just keep spritzing, every room in your house then would have that spread out like a mist comes down, and everything it touches is going to, bacteria and viruses is going to kill. And if you really want to get big kill, when you put hydrogen peroxide or alcohol on a paper towel, you rub it. It's the rubbing that breaks the virus seal and cause them to die. Doorknobs, the refrigerator handles, the stove handle, putting your toothbrush brush upside down in hydrogen peroxide so you don't keep reinfecting yourself. Your tongue cleaner, the sink, the knobs, your outdoor and indoor doorknobs. Simple things that can prevent our bodies from being overwhelmed. And a lot of studies now show it's not just a virus that can cause, like a measles virus, it's your immune system that is also at play there. So, yeah, we are beset with pollutants. We're not paying attention to it. And more these artificial hairsprays, perfumes, deodorants, these air fresheners, all these are chemicals, and we don't need them. Also, EcoWatch published a list of conditions that was linked to Roundup. You want to know what's listed in as an associate with Roundup, the herbicide? ADHD. In fact, in farming communities, there's a strong correlation between Roundup exposure and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Why? Because glyphosate's capacity to disrupt the thyroid hormone function. Alzheimer's disease, in fact, in the lab, Roundup causes the same type of oxidative stress and neural cell death observed in Alzheimer's disease, and it affects CAMK2, an enzyme whose dysregulation has also been linked to the disease. Also, autism, glyphosate has a number of known biological effects that align with the known pathologies associated with autism. And you also have birth defects. Roundup and glyphosate can disrupt the vitamin A, which is retinoic acid signaling pathway, which is crucial for normal fetal development. The babies of women living within 1 kilometer of field sprayed with glyphosate were more than twice as likely to have birth defects, according to a study on this. Brain cancer. In a study of children with brain cancer compared with healthy children, researchers found that if either parent had been exposed to Roundup during the 2 years before the child's birth, the chances of the child developing brain cancer doubled. And breast cancer, glyphosate induces human breast cancer cells growth via estrogen receptors. And the only long-term animal study of glyphosate exposure produced rats with mammary tumors and shortened lifespans. In fact, house-to-house surveys of 65,000 people in farming communities where Roundup is used, known there as the fumigated towns, found cancer rates to be 400% higher than the national average, with increases in breast, prostate, and lung cancer. And celiac disease, chronic kidney disease, colitis, depression, diabetes, heart disease. By the way, I'll just give you one example. Glyphosate can disrupt the body's enzymes, causing liposomal dysfunction, a major factor in cardiovascular disease and heart failure. Hypothyroidism, inflammatory bowel disease, which is known as leaky gut syndrome, liver disease, Lou Gehrig's disease, which is ALS, which is amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, multiple sclerosis. An increased incidence of inflammatory bowel disease has been found and associated with MS, and glyphosate may be a causal factor. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, Parkinson's, obesity, reproductive, and respiratory diseases. So the takeaway message is this. We live in extremely toxic times. And people who are cavalier or indifferent or don't care, you do so at your own risk. You know, we like to believe in life there is for every job, for every good student who has a nice relationship, you know, just a positive relationship with the teacher, with the, you know, the teacher's pet, there's a curve. And when someone likes us, suddenly a door opens, an opportunity is provided. When someone mentions us instead of someone else, that creates a curve, meaning we're now at the high end of the curve, where otherwise, without that effect, we would have been at the low end of the curve. So a lot of people pride themselves on always aligning themselves where they get the advantage over someone else on this curve of life. Well, two realities are going to come to meet you at some point. A, the environment doesn't have a curve. So whether you want to be in harm's way or not, if you're in the wrong place when there's a tornado, hurricane, earthquake, or a fire, the curve principle doesn't count. You're going to be affected. Separately, in life, what happens when you don't have that advantage, but you've been relying upon someone else to do something for you, that enabling factor, and now you got to do it on your own? Will you have then the strength of character, the discipline to go ahead and say, why am I eating this non-organic food when I could be eating organic? Do I really want the consequences of glyphosate in my body? Why am I spraying my lawn instead of going out there and creating an edible garden, what is called edible suburbs? Why am I buying my stuff from a local store instead of going to a food co-op or farmer's market? Why am I sitting here all day watching television or computer instead of exercising? You see, there is where that curve doesn't work. Why do you think people who are successful always want to hang out with successful people? They want to move to those very exclusive compounds. They want to work in industries where even if you fail up, not out. Because they're always living at the high end of the curve. And here's the interesting part. Here's my own personal observation. Those are always the people who die the fastest. Why? Because disease doesn't care about your curve, who you know, how powerful you are, how much money you have. And if you doubt me, I'll name an awful lot of very famous, very rich people who their curve and how up they were on it. Jacqueline Onassis. Look at all the people who could have used natural non-toxic therapies and chose instead to use the people on their curve. Didn't work for them. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Okay, so you're heartbroken. You sit around hoping, crying. You say you even thinking about dying? Well, before you do anything rash, do this.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Eric Nall. I'm on a telephone today, so I apologize for not having the same technical quality as we normally have, but there are days when I simply, being on the road, I cannot get to a good site that has access to a computer where I can hook up my portable, what is called a Comrex unit. It's like a miniature studio, and over the years they keep getting smaller and smaller. This is about the size of a medium-sized suitcase, but boy is it good. It used to be huge. Now they're getting smaller and smaller. In any case, today is commentary day, and I'm going to share a bunch of commentaries, some of my own and some of others, and people that I respect. And tomorrow I'm going to have a really interesting show because I've got an exclusive interview with a man who is he's a security expert, and he's been studying for decades the government's emergency plans. Now, I don't know how much money the government has actually spent. I don't know if anyone knows. I'm guessing it's somewhere between $2 to $3 trillion. It could be off. We'll find out when I ask him tomorrow. But the government has been working for more than 60 years in creating what is called continuation of government, meaning if there's a nuclear fallout, if there's a major cataclysmic event, the people in the government would have no problem. All their needs and lifestyle and quality of life would be covered. But it's only for them, and no one else would be allowed in. We're paying for this. So I got to ask, I wouldn't give a damn about anyone in government, not a single soul in government. I do care about the average person. I want to make sure that my neighbor and everyone else is as safe as possible, and they don't care about you. So we've been paying for them to be protected. It's all done in secret. The amount of money and the extent to which they will go is mind-boggling. They have one underground city that's bigger than Brooklyn. Why don't we know about it? Why isn't the media? Because they control the access and they control the information. So that's tomorrow, you know, the whole idea that the government has a place for everybody but you if there's a disaster. Now, this coming Sunday night, 7 o'clock, I'm going to do my webinar on reversing and slowing down the aging process. It's going to be very powerful because that's my whole life specialization, disease prevention and overcoming illnesses and repairing damage. There's three main factions. One, lengthen our telomeres. Two, DNA repair. And three, stimulating new mitochondria. So that's what we're going to be working on. So it's a big deal. And I'm going to talk about Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, memory loss, muscle aging, and aging of the eyes, and the musculoskeletal system, enzymes. Why do we not pay attention to these things when it's inevitable that everyone's going to be infected? So if you want, you can join us. We'll probably be packed by tomorrow. I've been told by one of our IT people that we have reached the maximum that we can go as far as bandwidth. So if you want to go online, I'll show a movie, then I'm going to have a long, and I don't know how long, but a long, and I answer dozens of questions in the process, webinar. You can go to GaryNall.com or PRN.fm and get that information. Now to commentaries. Oh, by the way, I'm also going to be hiring a person to do our progressive news hour twice a day plus hourly updates. If you have a good voice, you're smart, and you can apply, we'll be testing people and see who's best, and that will commence as soon as we find the right person. You can call our main number, 646-926-5422, and just say I'm calling for the news hour position. It's a paying position. And someone will get back to you. I've been looking forward to that for a long time to get that done. Because we don't have a progressive news hour. We have all these local political ones, and man, am I sick of all the politics. Glenn Ford, Black Agenda Report. I have a lot of respect for Glenn. He says the following, quote, Trump thought last month's attack on Syria had brought him immunity, or at least a respite from the wrath of the war party. It is as if the Gambino and Genovese crime families were arguing their turf disputes in the courts and the news media. The Democrats are screaming bloody murder over President Trump's firing of FBI Director James Comey, whom Hillary Clinton still blames for her defeat at the polls, and who the bipartisan war party has never forgiven for Comey's earlier hesitancy to blame the Russians the same offensive. Now that Trump has cut Comey loose, ostensibly for his handling of the Clinton email scandal, according to three letters sent by Trump and his two top Justice Department officials, the Democrats have stepped up calls for a special prosecutor to continue the evidenceless crusade against the Kremlin. It's the Saturday night massacre all over again, cried the Democrats, hearkening back to the weekend in 1973 when President Nixon fired Watergate special prosecutor Archibald Cox. But this is not about the rule of law, quite the opposite. It's about the continuing the momentum of the U.S. military offensive begun in 2011 under President Obama, a wholly illegal aggression that has destroyed Libya, killed 500,000 Syrians, delivered vast regions to the control of two feuding factions of Al-Qaeda, and brought the world closer to nuclear annihilation than at any time since the Cuban Missile Crisis. The war party is determined to make the offensive permanent, to keep up the pressure on the ultimate targets, Russia and China, until they break or capitulate to U.S. domination of the world. The current rabid anti-Russian hysteria adds another layer of fake news on top of the wholly fictional U.S. war on terror scenario. But these mega lies can no longer mask the greater obscenity of the 21st century, that the U.S. is allied with Al-Qaeda, whose jihadist act is imperialism's foot soldiers in the Middle East. Donald Trump thought last month's attack on Syria had brought him immunity, at least a respite, which was determined to burn him at the political stake, not for his raging racism and hostility to civil liberties, but for his previously stated opposition to regime change and never-ending tensions with Russia. Trump's 59-missile salvo against the Syrian air base was supposed to wipe the slate clean and forgive his heresies against the extra-legal rights of the exceptional U.S. empire. But apparently there is no statute of limitations and even the suggestion of peaceful coexistence with targeted states. And now, in an almost laughable legalistic perversion, a group of lawyers from the Obama White House, of all places, is suing the Trump administration for failing to provide sufficient legal rationale for last month's tomahawk hit on Syria. The lawyers at United to Protect Democracy claim their insider knowledge of, quote, how the federal government works gives them unique insights on implementing, quote, and enforcing the norms that have constrained presidential power for decades, although they never constrained Obama from his own lurch towards apocalypse. 2011, indeed, these legal hitmen for empire acknowledge as much, admitting or bragging that, quote, we defended past presidents against legitimate oversight and illegitimate attacks. The self-styled so-called watchdog group does not list its board or members on its website, but their admission implicates them in Obama's legal defense of his regime's challenge assault on Libya. So that's part of what he has to say, and I'm glad that he came out and said it, because Glenn Ford has been one of a handful of individuals who's been willing to take on Obama and show how corrupt he was and how corporatized he was, and the fact that his only agenda was for those in power and nothing else. Now, this is from David Markray from Common Dreams, another credible source, a good source, in fact. Sorry, folks, but Donald Trump is everything we deserve. We pretend we don't, but we do. The main reason why I can't bear to watch comedians do their self-congratulatory Donald Trump shtick is that their phony indignation is based upon the premise that this guy is somehow unworthy of being our president, which is ridiculous. Trump is not only worthy of being president, he's perfect for it. Consider, the U.S. is first and foremost a nation of dedicated consumers. The world knows this, we know this, and Trump knows this. Indeed, there's nothing we Americans won't consume if it's properly advertised and promoted. And say what you will about Trump, but the man is, first and foremost, an accomplished salesman and promoter. Consider, we Americans don't form long lines outside of pottery or literature readings. There's also no shame in that. We simply aren't a nation of poetry lovers. But we do form long lines outside of Best Buy, beginning at midnight, waiting for the store to open so we can purchase the newest technology. That's because we're a nation addicted to buying stuff on sale. And Trump is a brilliant salesman. Consider, we idolize rich people because that seems vaguely and uncomfortably unchristian. We pretend we don't, but we do. We tell our kids that money isn't everything, but we don't even believe it ourselves. We're in awe of Wall Street because Wall Street is rich and Trump is rich. Consider, we idolize TV celebrities, and Trump was a TV celebrity. He had his own show. We idolize glamour, and the Trumps are glamorous. Wife Melania and daughter Ivanka are exotic beauties. Grant granted, that is more a tribute to recent advances in plastic surgery than the generosity of Mother Nature, but exotic beauties nonetheless. And as much as we pretend to respect authenticity, we don't. Plastic surgery is good. Consider, unlike much of the world, we Americans despise intellectuals. We pretend we don't, but we do. We hate know-it-alls. We hate smarty pants, media types, and we hate deep thinkers. We don't want to be reminded of how ignorant we are. We like brevity and plain talk. We like certitude. We hate nuance, ambiguity, and self-doubt. Arguably, not counting Ronald Reagan, Trump is the most anti-intellectual president since Andrew Jackson. Consider we Americans respect muscle, strength, and power, which is to say we prefer war to peace. We pretend we don't, but we do. If that weren't the case, our defense budgets wouldn't be so absurdly bloated, and we wouldn't have been engaged in all the military adventurism that has defined us since the end of World War II. Consider, we Americans are a narcissistic people. We pretend we aren't, but we all know we are. We don't have to be tied down and waterboarded to blurt out the fact that we think we're the greatest country in the world. Not only the greatest country in the world, but the greatest country in the history of the world. If that ain't narcissism, what is? And yet, for all this, we pretend to be surprised that we have elected a shallow, dishonest, narcissistic bully as a president. As Kurt Vonnegut wrote in Mother Night, we are what we pretend to be. So we must be careful about what we pretend to be. I have some thoughts I want to share with you. I'm very concerned that we're not looking carefully. Now, on different shows at different periods of time, I've shared my own particular insights as to what I thought the problems were. And I believe it's just too easy. It's too low-hanging a fruit to blame a Trump, or a Bush, or an Obama, or a Clinton, or a Reagan for all of our ills. It's also too easy to blame the Republicans and Democrats or members of Congress. It's also too easy to blame the media. At some point, if we're going to be honest, we have to realize that either through what we have actively done, in ignorant support, unquestioning support, obedience, or by what we've intentionally not done, the intentional ignorance of physicians, for example, to understanding what it is to be a child instead of what it is to be a diagnosis in the statistical manual of psychiatry, the diagnostic manual that tells you, oh, if Jimmy looks out the window more than twice an hour, Jimmy has a brain chemical imbalance and needs Ritalin in order for the rest of his life in order for Jimmy to sit still. Is there any science behind it? Absolutely, possibly not. Is there any legitimacy to it? Not a shred of evidence to it. Then why are you willing to do it? Well, because I'm told to. And as a psychiatrist seeking some legitimacy in an unlegitimate field, I can either go back to giving lobotomies, I can give electroconvulsive therapy, but it's a whole lot easier to give a drug. What if the drug kills someone? Well, it's not my problem. I'm rewarded no matter what. You're kind of like an oncologist then, right? 97% of all oncologists don't succeed, and yet they're rewarded handsomely, I might mention. So that's not science. Who said medicine was based upon science? If medicine was based upon science, do you think we'd be giving 10 million of women every year synthetic hormone replacement therapy, which has a known minimally adverse effect of 13%, causing strokes, heart attack, colorectal cancer, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and dementia? No, if you're a woman and you're taking synthetic hormone replacement therapy, you're running with a blindfold on across a minefield. But why would you do that, knowing that you're not helping a woman, you're hurting a woman? That's misogynist, but it also is disempowering women. Of course it is. But remember, we're the orthodoxy, and orthodoxy never changes. It never apologizes. It doesn't have to. Because when the New York Times or the Washington Post or Anderson Cooper specifically ever want the truth, they never go to the source of the truth. They always go to the source of power, because there's the assumption that power is always correct. Everything else is a deviation. And the further removed by deviation, the less like you are to ever be accepted. So even if you're a doctor who has seen the truth and you no longer want to poison or limit the healing potential of your patient, so you start working outside of that model, if you cured every patient in time, you would be completely demonized. You'd be attacked, ridiculed, and probably destroyed in your license to practice medicine. Not because you weren't helping your patients. That's irrelevant. In medicine today, it's absolutely positively irrelevant. If every patient dies, nothing will change in medicine. There won't be a single change. That's how corrupt medicine is today and how corrupt doctors are. Are they stupid? Not at all. Are they smart? You bet. Are they greedy bastards? More than greedy bastards. Should we hold these people in utter contempt? Absolutely, positively. Will we? Not one. Who will hold in contempt is the doctor who decides to do something different and is right, helps and cures the patient using natural non-toxic therapy. That's the one you want to demonize. Just ask Anderson Cooper and what he did to Wakefield. Deplorable, despicable, what that guy did. But will he be held accountable? Never. He'll be rewarded. Because we're in the orthodoxy, you're rewarded no matter how wrong you are. You're never held accountable because orthodoxy can never apologize. And if you're ultra-orthodox, then you're not a human being. You're a codified, solidified, completely entrapped in a ritual. Whether or not the ritual has purpose, meaning, legitimacy is irrelevant. It is honoring the ritual. You want to doubt me? Then go back and ask all those hundreds of millions of people who were going to Mass and learning Latin, being taught in Latin when they didn't know Latin, what was the purpose of it? The stupidity goes from the top to the bottom in every profession and every field. So from my perspective, I can't blame the doctor. I can't blame the legislator. I can't blame Anderson Cooper. He is what he is. And do you really think he would have gotten where he was if he didn't spend some time being a very famous son from a very famous Gloria Vanderbilt family? Yeah. Try that on. Do you really think that oncologists would still be making their millions of dollars a year if they use natural therapies instead of chemotherapy to cure their patients? Do you really think psychiatrists would be accepted and promoted and appreciated if they were using talk therapy, which is legitimate, and cleansing and detoxification and getting kids off caffeine and electromagnetic pulses? No. No. Ask the Peter Bregans, and only the few handful that are actually willing to do it. Do you think putting silver mercury in a person's mouth, where they're respected for doing it, but taking that mercury out of the mouth and detoxifying the body and getting the person's immune system back up and running again, which one's going to be rewarded and praised? Which reporter is going to be rewarded and praised? The one that tells you the truth, because they didn't start with a political ideology that frames their discourse? So in that light, I think we have to look, as Chris Hedges has it, at Trump is a symptom, not a disease. The disease is the average person's unwillingness to do even the most superficial research into a fact before they've already commenced to anoint themselves in whatever blather follows from the official media or the official organs representing the people. Forget the firing of James Comey. Forget the paralysis in Congress. Forget the idiocy of a press that covers our descent into tyranny as if it were a sports contest between corporate Republican and corporate Democrat, or reality show starring our maniacal president and the idiots that surround him. And do you know anyone around him that's not an idiot? Tell me who it is. Forget the noise. The crisis we face is not embodied in the public images of the politicians that run our dysfunctional government. The crisis we face is the result of a 40-year slow-motion corporate coup that has rendered the citizen impotent, left us without any authentic democratic institutions, and allowed corporate and military power to become omnipotent. This crisis was spawned by a corrupt electoral system of legalized bribery and empowered those public figures that master the arts of entertainment and artifice. And if we do not overthrow the neoliberal corporate forces that have destroyed our democracy, we will continue to vomit up more monstrosities as dangerous as Donald Trump. But remind you, Trump is the symptom, not the disease. Our descent into despotism began with the pardoning of Richard Nixon, all of whose impeachable crimes are now legal, and the extrajudicial assault, including targeted assassinations and imprisonment, carried out on dissidents and radicals, and especially black radicals. It began with the creation of a corporate-funded foundations and organizations that took control of the press, the courts, the universities, the scientific research, and the two-party political party. It began with the empowering of militarized police to kill unarmed civilians and the spread of our horrendous system of mass incarceration and the death penalty. It began with the stripping away of our most basic constitutional rights, privacy, due process, habeas corpus, fair elections, and dissent. It began when big money was employed by political operatives like Roger Stone, a close Trump advisor, to create negative political advertisements and false narratives to deceive the public, turning political debate into burlesque. On all these fronts, we have lost. We are trapped like rats in a cage. A narcissistic, an imbecile, maybe turning the electric shocks on and off, but the problem is the corporate state, and unless we dismantle that, we are doomed. Racist, violent, and despotic forces have always been a part of the American landscape and have often been tolerated and empowered by the state to persecute poor people of color and dissidents. Now, these forces are denied absolute power as long as a majority of citizens have a say in their own governance. The corporate elites, however, frightened by what the political scientist Samuel Huntington called an excess of democracy that originated in the 1960s, methodically destroyed the democratic edifice. They locked the citizens out of government, and by so doing, made sure that power shifted into the hands of enemies of the open society. When democratic institutions cease to function, when the consent of the governed becomes a joke, and despots, cranks, and conspiracy theorists, and con artists, and generals, and billionaires, and proto-fascists fill the political void, you're in trouble. They give vent to popular anger and frustration while arming the state to do the majority of what it has long done to the minority. This tale's as old as civilization. It was played out in ancient Greece and Rome and the Soviet Union and fascist Germany and fascist Italy and the former Yugoslavia. Trump, an acute embarrassment to the corporate state and organs of internal security, may be removed from the presidency. I said on several occasions, I don't believe he'll make it 2 years. But such a palace coup would only further consolidate the power of the deep state and intensify internal measures of repression. Millions of people, including the undocumented, those who have felony convictions, those locked in cages, and poor people of color, have already been stripped of their rights, and some have been indiscriminately murdered by police. These minorities' reality of daily state terror, unless the process of corporate pillage is halted, will spread and become normal, with or without Trump. So think of that. Now, I also want to share something with you. This is from Emma Graham Harrison from The Guardian. And this is for all of you who voted for Clinton. The women who said we want a woman president, the feminists who said she's for us, the good corporate Democrats who said we can trust her, she's dependable, she's a neocon, we don't have to ever question that always in every turn she's ever had, her and her husband have always thought first of themselves, secondly of their corporate masters, and sometimes, maybe, possibly, the people. Here's something you didn't hold her accountable for, but you should, as well as Obama, before he makes another $2.5 million lecture. Quote, 6 months after Muhammad Yusuf had been sold, tortured, and forced to watch a friend die, he found himself back at the parched, dusty bus station where his ordeal began, facing the man who had made him a slave. Unembarrassed and unrepentant, the smuggler was still touting for business among the crowds flooding into Agadez, an oasis town on the fringe of the Sahara Desert in central Niger, that has for centuries been a trading center and gateway to shifting paths across the desert. Quote, I told him, my friend died in Libya because of you, Yusuf said a few days after the meeting. Then desperately hungry, I asked him for some food. The man shrugged off both appeals and walked away, saying, I'm sorry, but God will help you. Yusuf, a 24-year-old Nigerian, was one of thousands of people who had traveled to Libya looking for work or hoping to sail to Europe, who had instead been sucked into a grim and violent world of slave markets, private prisons, and brutal forced brothels. The danger of attempting to cross the Mediterranean to Europe is in overcrowded, unseaworthy vessels has been highlighted by a series of desperate rescue missions and thousands of deaths at sea. Last week, at least 245 people were killed by shipwrecks, bringing the total this year to 1,300. Less well known are the dangers of Libya itself for migrants fleeing poverty across West Africa. The country's slide into chaos followed the 2011 death of dictator Gaddafi and the collapse of the government have made it a breeding ground for crime and exploitation. Two rival governments, an ISIS franchise and the countless local militias competing for control of the vast, sparsely populated territory awash in weapons, have allowed traffickers to flourish, checked only by the activities of their criminal rivals. Last year, more than 180,000 refugees arrived in Italy, the vast majority of them through Libya, according to the United Nations International Organization of Migration. That number is forecast to be 200,000 this year. Migrants who managed to reach Europe from Libya have long told of being kidnapped by smugglers who have then tortured them to extort cash as they waited for boats. But in recent years, this abuse has developed into a modern-day slave trade, plied along the routes once used by slaving caravans that has engulfed tens of thousands of lives. The new slave traders operate with such impunity that survivors say some victims are being sold in public markets. Quote, they took people, put them in the street under a sign that says for sale. This is according to Shamsuddin Jibril from Cameroon, who twice saw men traded publicly in the streets of the central Libyan town of Shaba, once famous for the home of young Gaddafi. They tied their hands just like in the former slave trade, and they drove them here in the back of a Toyota truck. There were about 5 or 6 to 7 of them. He was too frightened to speak to the men who were lined up near a monument, and another migrant reported being auctioned off at a dusky parking lot on the outskirts of the town. And today it is the most northerly town in West Africa you can reach without papers. And then he goes on to talk about how the women are, even if they paid the money, in most cases they pay the money to someone in their country who then takes them through Libya, knowing that in Libya they will be captured and the women and young girls will be put into brothels. They'll fetch about $2,000 each. The men will be put at hard labor, but until they're put at hard labor and sold, they will be put into prisons, frequently being beaten, fingers cut off while the cell phones are showing this, so their parents and family back home will send $200 or $300 or $400, and then they're killed. And there's a whole big, gigantic slave market, slave trading, going on now. So this is what's happening that the media is not covering. I commend The Guardian for covering it. I read the whole article. By the end of it, when you see what happens to these men and women, tears well up in your eyes. Could you imagine? You're already in a bad situation. You want to go to a place where you can start over, and you put the last few dollars you have to hopefully find a place on a boat that you're guaranteed. But while you're waiting on the boat in Libya, since it's a country without any laws or any rules whatsoever, you're then captured, and if you resist, you're killed, and or you're put into sex slavery, or by the tens of thousands, or you're put into forced working, and they'll work you to death. So, there was a time when Gaddafi's Libya was the number one of all African countries, all 54, it was number one. Life expectancy, quality of life, income, education, 84% literacy rate, projects, no terrorism, no crime. Women had more rights than any other Muslim country in the world. It was against law for you to be abusive to a woman. And they had more women in their small legislative committees than any other country in the world. And look at it today. Who in the media, who on the left, who in the Democratic Party have called out Clinton and Obama for what they have created and the unintended consequences of now it is the number one slaving country in the world? Next time you see one of the Clintons, or Bill, or Hillary, or Obama on television or giving a speech, ask them, are you being responsible for taking the number one country in Africa, turning it into the worst, and reintroducing slavery in Libya? Just a thought. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.